Hi, everybody. Good day to you, wherever you may be. This is John Chomo, host of the podcast Then and Now, and this is episode number four. We're going to go through some so-called facts of the week, some topics, the topics mainly in the sports world this week because of all the goings on. We'll also hit the election that it's today, actually, as I record this, Tuesday, March 19th is election day, primary election day here in Ohio. And we have three really good questions to wrap up our podcast, plus a brief tribute at the end of today's podcast. So let's get started, shall we? Let's look at the birthdays and events from the week of March 20th, which is Wednesday, to the following Tuesday, March 26th. On March 20th, we have three famous birthdays. One of them is Fred Rogers. You would know him as Mr. Rogers, perhaps, who helped millions of kids grow up, really, on public television. Fred Rogers, born in the Pittsburgh area on March 20th, 1928. He passed away in 2003. Bobby Orr, who was the most exciting hockey player, certainly as I was growing up and becoming a teenager and into my high school years, Bobby Orr of the Boston Bruins is 76 years old on March 20th, and so is the film director Spike Lee. Spike Lee will be 67 on March 20th. On March 21st, 1980, President Jimmy Carter announced that the United States would not send our Olympic teams to Moscow for the Summer Olympic Games of 1980. That was in response to the Soviet Union's aggressive invasion of Afghanistan on the last weekend of 1979. That's always been a great debate. I've talked about that in class numerous times. On the one hand, it's a great non-military way to register our unhappiness at the Soviets' activities. But on the other hand, imagine that you were an Olympic athlete, Olympic class in whatever sport that you chose, and that you had made the U.S. Olympic team, and this was a lifetime dream of yours come true. And then politics gets in the way, international relations, whatever you want to call it, and you can't go and you don't get your chance to participate in the Olympics. Really tough call and a very controversial call by President Carter. Manny Sanguian turns 80 on March 21st. Manny Sanguian was a catcher in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization, played on both their 1971 and 1979 World Series championship teams. Always smiling, terrific guy, has a barbecue place outside of PNC Park. Happy 80th, Manny. On March 22nd, in 1963, the album Please Please Me was released in Great Britain. It was the first LP performed by the group called The Beatles. They recorded it in 11 hours, and that seems out of this world impossible in today's day where it takes months to record and mix and remix albums. They recorded that in 11 hours in one night, and the rest, as they say, is history. Several birthdays on March 22nd. William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk in the original Star Trek TV series on NBC. William Shatner will be 93, still going. Bob Costas, the longtime sportscaster, mostly with NBC. Bob Costas will be 72 on March 22nd. Actor Reese Witherspoon, she'll be 48. And J.J. Watt, recently retired, tremendous defensive end in the NFL from Wisconsin via the MAC. J.J. Watt will be 35 on March 22nd. Into television now. He is on the CBS NFL Today team now. On March 23rd in 2010, President Obama signed his signature law, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. That was March 23rd, 2010. On March 24th, a couple of birthdays to note, George Sisler, Hall of Famer, had the hit record for one season for a long time until Ichiro broke it about 10 or 12 years ago. George Sisler, born in the Akron area, Manchester, to be honest, in 1893. And Peyton Manning, the Hall of Fame quarterback from the Colts and the Broncos and from the University of Tennessee. Peyton Manning, now multimedia star, will be 48 on March 24th. March 25th marks the anniversary of a very tragic event in New York City. The Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire happened on that date in 1911. It's something that I taught about during my career, taught about in American history. Mostly women, mostly young women, mostly immigrant young women were working in the factory. The doors were locked, couldn't get out. Over 140 of them died in the fire. It led to many of the union movements that we've seen, we certainly saw in the 20th century. Just the tragedy, the magnitude of that tragedy, really, something good came out of it, fortunately. It's hard to say that about an event that kills so many people. On March 25th, Aretha Franklin was born on that date in 1942. Sir Elton John will be 77 on March 25th. And local great, guy I saw in concert a couple of times, the late great Michael Stanley was born on March 25th, 1948. That's a pretty good musical birthday there, March 25th. On March 26th, it's the anniversary of the most watched college basketball game in history. 35.1 million viewers tuned into NBC that night to watch the Michigan State Spartans defeat the Indiana State Sycamores 75 to 64. The game was played in Salt Lake City. It featured the incomparable Irvin Magic Johnson for Michigan State and the equally incomparable Larry Bird from Indiana State. Those two men would go on to really save the NBA as they ascended to the Lakers and Celtics, respectively, in the draft following that game. Also on that date in 1987, the High School National Association adopted the three-point line for high school basketball. That was about 12 years too late for me, I gotta say. Birthdays on March 26th, there are five really notable ones. Former Speaker of the House, current Congresswoman from California, Nancy Pelosi, will turn 84. The great Bob Woodward, who, along with his partner Carl Bernstein, sussed out the Watergate scandal for the Washington Post in the early 1970s. Bob Woodward, still doing his job, will be 81. Diana Ross, lead singer of the Supremes and a terrific solo career as well. Diana Ross will turn 80 on March 26th. Steven Tyler, lead man of Aerosmith, will be 76 that day. And Kenny Chesney will be 56 on March 26th. So there you go. There are some events and birthdays from the upcoming week. We'll note those as the days go by. Now, on to a couple of different topics. One being the NCAA tournaments, both men and women. We'll take them one at a time. For the men's tournament, which starts actually a few hours after I record this on Tuesday evening with the play-in games in Dayton, we have a contest on ESPN.com, the tournament contest. Our group is called Then and Now Hoops. I've had a couple people ask me about that in the past few days. Look for Then and Now Hoops in the groups on ESPN.com's tournament dashboard. The password, once you get there, is Then and Now, no capital letters, no spaces, just the letters, Then and Now. That'll get you in. We have seven or eight people in already, last time I checked this morning. And let's have some fun with it. We'll see how we do. We'll see if we can crown a champ. We'll certainly recognize whoever becomes the champion of that group in a few weeks here. Took a trip to Cleveland last Thursday with my old high school buddy, Eric Ball. We met Jeff and Ken up there, friends, and we sat and watched a couple of the first round MAC tournament games on Thursday afternoon. That's a bonus of being retired. I can run up there at noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We could watch some basketball on a Thursday. We watched Bowling Green defeat Central Michigan, and then the featured game, our Akron Zips defeated Jeff's Miami Redhawks in the third game, as it was, of the four games that day. Now, the follow a couple of nights later, I should say, the final of the MAC tournament renewed the oldest and best rivalry in the conference, in my opinion. Akron versus Kent State, the neighborhood rivals, as they always say on TV, only 11 miles apart. We know that here in this area. And it's one of the greatest rivalries in college sports, I think, bar none. The margin now that Akron defeated Kent State by 1 point in the championship game, Akron has won 83 games and Kent State has won 82. And the 165th game went down to literally the buzzer for a championship. That's how it goes when Akron and Kent play. Never mind who's seeded number two or number eight. Doesn't matter. Akron and Kent always play really spirited, close basketball games. The networks have started to pick up on that, and usually the two regular season meetings are nationally televised. For the last few years, that's been the case. Either CBS Sports Network or one of the ESPN networks usually picks up Akron and Kent because basketball people know it's just so intense and such a great neighborhood rivalry. You just never know what's going to happen in those games, and that game certainly ended in a let's say a strange and peculiar way, and it fell the Zips' favor this time, and the Zips will represent the MAC in the NCAA tournament. More about that later on here. Okay. Also, I want to mention one of my former friends in junior high and high school, former teammate both in baseball and basketball, Duquesne head coach Keith Dambrot. Keith announced his retirement yesterday as of their end in the NCAA tournament. He coached Duquesne to their first NCAA men's basketball tournament berth since 1977 with their win Sunday afternoon on CBS over VCU. Keith is retiring. He announced it Monday. This will be his last game or series of games if they're successful. I wanted to tip my hat to my old friend and teammate. He's had a tremendous coaching career starting, at Central Michigan, where something not so great happened, and he rebuilt his career. Coached LeBron James at St. V for a couple of years, headed to Akron and did just a magnificent job there coaching his alma mater, the Zips, coached them to three NCAA tournaments. And now he took Duquesne, which is where his father, Sid, played basketball in the early 1950s. Sid would be looking down and smiling for sure with what Keith has been able to do with the Duquesne Dukes. And I know Keith knows that, and it makes him very, very happy and very melancholy, I'm sure. So happy retirement, Keith. Hope you enjoy it as much as I have. And great job, and good luck this week. All right, the women's tournament. We'll mention the Buckeyes. We've talked a lot about some of the other teams here. The women's team from Ohio State, Big Ten regular season champs, I think got a really tough draw in the seedings. They're the number two seed in the West Regional. They will play two home games this week, followed by a trip west for a potential Sweet 16 game against UConn and Paige Buchers. That will be no picnic. If they get by UConn, then the final in the West Regional could match Ohio State with the number one seed Southern California, which opened the season by beating the Buckeyes 83 to 74. So Ohio State has a tough road if they want to get to the women's Final Four. If they do, they get to play in Cleveland, which I would imagine there'd be a lot of scarlet and gray up there in the arena in downtown Cleveland if that happened. But they'll have to do some work to get there, that's for sure. We'll do a bit of a baseball preview next week. As I record this, we're just a few hours away, literally, from the start of the Major League regular season. It starts at 6:05 Wednesday morning in Seoul, Korea, Seoul, South Korea, as the Dodgers and Padres will play two games there before heading back to the States. They will meet Wednesday morning at 6:05, Thursday morning at 6:05. And then the rest of the teams will start the regular season about a week later, the following Thursday, I think it will be. I took part in a fantasy draft last night, Monday night, as we record this. My first choice, I was eighth pick in the draft. My first choice will delight you Cleveland fans. It was Jose Ramirez. He was the number one choice of my junior Pirates. Also, as we record on Tuesday, it's Election Day here in Ohio, as I mentioned previously. There will be more on this in Three Good Questions coming up in a couple of minutes. We only had a couple of contested races on our ballot, a lot of uncontested. I still vote for those, even though they're uncontested. The 34th Ohio House District on my ballot was a three-person contest. It'll be interesting to see who gets that nod. And there was one Ohio Supreme Court race in the party where there were two candidates, so we had to pick one from that. Otherwise, it was a lot of unopposed, unopposed, unopposed. But always go vote. Your vote matters no matter what's on the ballot. So that's my lesson for you guys today. Vote when it comes time, darn it. Register and vote. Do it this November if you're going to be 18 for sure. Okay, moving right along. Let's get to three good questions. And boy, we have three really good questions this week. The first one's from Roman at THS. And he asked this question about a week ago, okay, not knowing what was going to happen. His question was, what do I think Creighton's ceiling is in the men's basketball tournament? Creighton University in Omaha, Nebraska, have a very good team. They're a three seed in the NCAA tournament. Well, it just so happens that Sunday night when the brackets were unveiled, guess who Creighton drew? That's right, the University of Akron Zips. So, A, I cannot root for Creighton in the first round of the tournament, obviously. Let's hope Akron can pull the 14-3 upset and win their first Division I men's tournament game ever. Creighton has a very good team. They have three really good guards that can really shoot it. They're well coached. I think, you know, before I knew they were playing Akron, I think Creighton could make a real run, maybe even an Elite Eight run with what they have. They are very together and very solid. Now, if Akron's going to pull the upset, they're going to have to shoot the three a little bit better than they have been the last couple of weeks. They really did lay some bricks up there when I was up there last Thursday, for instance. And again, they went through a dry spell against Kent State in the championship game on Saturday night. If a team's hitting shots, though, any one of those teams is good enough to win. Even a 1-16 has happened a couple times in the last 3 or 4 years. If somebody's hitting shots, they're tough to beat. So Creighton, yeah, I think their ceiling might be the Elite Eight regional final round. I really don't see them going to the Final Four. Anything could happen. Hopefully, they get beat by the Akron Zips, though. We'll see. Second question from my friend Don Duffy. His question is, what are my thoughts on policies making it harder to vote? Well, I think they're repulsive, to be honest. All through our careers at THS, the government teachers got students registered to vote. That was part of our senior government curriculum when government was a senior level class. A few years ago, we had to move it around because of the state testing, and government now is taught to juniors who aren't quite there yet in terms of getting registered and voting. Hopefully you still do when you're seniors. But we made great efforts. We probably registered over 1,000 students over the years to vote as part of our government curriculum, as I said. And it's really disappointing to me and to most who were in my shoes that one of our two major parties now actively tries to make voting much more difficult, especially for young people, trying to move precincts around on campus to different places to confuse young voters, making it harder for them, giving them fewer places to vote early. It's very disheartening and disappointing to see that. We should be getting everybody to vote, as many people as possible. And for the fact that one of our two major parties tries to actively deny that is really repulsive and disgusting to me. So I think I made my thoughts clear on that little question. Let's move along here. Our third question, boy, I had to do a little bit of research for this one. It's from Matt's friend Nick, our friend Nick Brausch. In light of Jake Diebler being promoted from the interim role to head coach of the Ohio State men's basketball program, what are some other examples of interim coaches being promoted to the lead role? The first one that came to my mind, ironically, was the University of Michigan, that team up north. Back in 1989, they had a really good basketball team, men's basketball team, coached by a guy named Bill Frieder. Bill Frieder announced at the end of the regular season that he was leaving to take the head coaching job at Arizona State University. Well, the Michigan team had qualified for the NCAA tournament. They were very, very good that year. And they went to the athletic director. The athletic director at Michigan at that time was the legendary former football coach, Bo Schembechler. And probably in his greatest moment up there at that school up north, his quote was, "A Michigan man will coach the Michigan team." And he promoted the assistant coach, Steve Fisher, to coach the team in the NCAA tournament. Well, what happened? Under Steve Fisher, the Wolverines won 6 games in a row, beat Seton Hall with 2 free throws by Ramil Robinson with a couple of seconds to go, and won the national championship, their only men's national championship, when they had let go of the coach at the end of the regular season. That's the first one that came to my mind, the most outstanding, I think, example of what Nick was asking about. And it's ironic that it happened up there at the school up north. I looked up a few other instances that I could remember, and I came up with a top five, Steve Fisher being number one. Number two, let's go with the New York Yankees in 1978. In mid-season, George Steinbrenner fired manager Billy Martin for about the fourth time and promoted former Cleveland Indians pitcher Bob Lemon to the managerial spot. The Yankees at one point were 14 games behind the Boston Red Sox, came back, caught them at the end of the season, and won a very famous one-game playoff at Fenway Park in October of 1978. Bob Lemon's Yankees went on and beat the Royals in the ALCS and defeated the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series and became world champions again. Third example is Pat Riley. Young Pat Riley, former Lakers player, took over early in the season when the ownership fired the coach Paul Westhead, who had won a NBA title in 1980. Pat Riley took that Lakers team, changed the offense a little bit, and won the NBA title in 1982 with the Los Angeles Lakers. Number four is Harvey Keene. Harvey Keene, former major league hitter, really good hitter, batting champ once, was a coach on the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. Was the manager? The manager, I'm sorry, was Buck Rogers. Buck Rogers got fired in June. Harvey Keene was promoted to manager. The Brewers went on a tear. They hit the ball like nobody's business. Their nickname the rest of the season was Harvey's Wallbangers. That's pretty clever. And the Brewers went on and won the American League pennant, lost a tough seven-game World Series to the St. Louis Cardinals that year. The fifth and final one that we'll mention here, there are more, but these were the five that stood out to me. The fifth one was the 2003 then Florida Marlins, managed by former Cleveland manager Jeff Torborg. They were struggling in May, and ownership fired Jeff Torborg and hired an old guy who used to manage the San Diego Padres by the name of Jack McKeon. Under Jack McKeon, the team kind of took off. They had good pitching. Josh Beckett was their number one pitcher. They had a young rookie star, 20-year-old Miguel Cabrera. Perhaps you've heard of him if you're a baseball fan. And the Marlins went on and took it all. They beat the Yankees in the World Series that year in six games, Beckett winning the sixth game at Yankee Stadium. So old Jack McKeon got it done where Jeff Torborg couldn't. Those are my top five examples of an interim coach being promoted and having a very, very different result. Jake Diebler did so well as Ohio State's coach that Ohio State has hired him now as the men's basketball coach moving forward. In my view, they got kind of jobbed in the Big Ten tournament there. The referees kind of took one away from them against Illinois. It was the second biggest fouls disparity between two teams in any game this season in college basketball. So it could have been, if they'd won that game, they may have been a candidate to get picked for the big dance. But they play, as we speak here tonight, against Cornell, I believe it is, in the NIT. So that team has hopefully three or four more games to play. Jake Diebler's done a terrific job, and we wish him the best of luck at Ohio State. Okay. When I was young, many stand-up comedians would throw in an obligatory mother-in-law joke or two into their routine. The mother-in-law in these jokes was portrayed as snarky, especially toward the son-in-law, which in most cases was the comedian himself. My experience in my life turned out to be far different. My mother-in-law, Judy Hardgrove, passed away on Sunday morning after a long illness. From my first meeting with her, she was always kind to me and just about everybody else, for that matter. She was also a terrific grandma to our son Matt and her 10 other grandchildren. Those 70s comedians didn't know what they were talking about. They never met Judy. Okay, with that, we'll finish it up for today, for this week. Hopefully, everybody has a good week. Get in there and join our tournament group at Then and Now Hoops on ESPN.com. Password Then and Now. Have a good week, everybody. Enjoy the games if you're watching the games. Let's have a great start to baseball season, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.